Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everybody, welcome to another episode of Tuesday Night Jaw Meets on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Jim Smallman. Hope you're all well. Apologies for the distance between the last episode and this one, but I put a pretty cool interview together with someone who is an incredibly interesting and awesome addition to British wrestling at the moment. That is the one and only Sugar Dunkerton. So I popped and visited him in Leeds on my way to do a stand-up gig. Had a chat with him for about an hour. Could easily have chatted to him for another 3 or 4 hours. We didn't get through half the stuff I wanted to ask him because he's just such a cool guy, such an interesting and exciting guy around wrestling. Just a really, really good dude. And America's loss is our gain as he's over here for 6 months. He's someone I first watched in Chikara, and we talk about this a fair while ago, and then he's someone who he's spoken to me about getting booked for Progress in the past, and nothing's come up just yet for him, but he's someone who is really, really killing it with all the opportunities he's getting in the UK. I think we talk about the fact he initially came over for a short period of time and he keeps coming over for longer and longer and longer and longer, and he's gradually becoming part of the furniture here. And I think you'll realise if you've someone you've never heard of before, you hear him talk for 5 minutes, you'll want to get to know him and you'll want to get to know more about him. And hopefully you'll go and check him out on a show near you soon because he's a cool dude. Before we get to the chat between me and Mr. Dunkerton, some things to plug. My book, jimsmallman.com/book. Weirdly, my book got a really good review in the Sunday Times Literary Review, which is not something I ever thought would happen because I'm a man who was expected to fail GCSE English. And to not only get reviewed by such a sort of legendary tome, but also to get a good review is nuts. And it still blows my mind that people buy the book and then send me cool messages about it or get me to sign it or whatever. That's really, really awesome and genuinely touches me every time. So jimsmallman.com/book if you would like to buy my book. I did a stand-up gig tonight. I ain't doing any more of them for a bit, but sometimes I do them, and I tend to tell you about them on Twitter, which is at Jim Smallman. Jim Smallman's the same for Instagram as well, which I'm starting to use a little bit more. And progresswrestling.com. We have some shows on sale. We have a pretty nuts Super Strong Style 16 planned, which is May the 4th, 5th and 6th at Alexandra Palace. Was great fun last year. We're doing it there again this year. We've also got shows coming up at the end of February, which is sold out at the Electric Ballroom in Camden on February the 24th. We have a show for the first time in Bournemouth on Saturday, March the 9th. And then on Sunday, March the 10th, we have a show in Birmingham. You can still get tickets for both of them via progresswrestling.com, as you can for Super Strong Style 16 on the 4th, 5th and 6th of May. Come to those shows. I think we've announced a couple of names for it now. But trust me when I say we're going all out with some pretty cool names this year. And you'll want to come and be part of it. Because let's be honest, it's fun. It's a May Bank holiday weekend hanging out with people who like wrestling. It's a pretty good time. Demand-progress.com for all the Progress stuff. Obviously, I'm heavily involved with NXT UK as well. So do please watch that on the WWE Network every Wednesday, 8 p.m. UK time. That's 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the USA. I've been having great fun being part of that and being part of the team that puts that together. Obviously, check out everything on the Distraction Pieces Network because it's all good. Love it all. That's it. I'm going to get into the chat now with me and Sugar Dunkerton. Have a listen. Check him out once you've listened to him as well, because he's a great guy. And I'll see you on the other side. Cheers.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
So, in a sentence that it's taken me a long time to say, hello, Mr. Dunkerton.
I feel so like super official, like this is a court, like this is a court dictation or something like that. Mr. Smallman, I do presume. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So, we've wanted to make this happen for a bit, like, because we've been chatting on Twitter, and my diary is lined up today where I am. I'm in Sheffield tonight doing a stand-up gig. And you're currently based in Leeds.
That's correct.
Which will baffle people because of your accent, but we'll get to that in a minute. And we're now in a room somewhere in Leeds, somewhere within the horrible one-way system of Leeds city centre. We're in a room with six bunk beds. What's happening? What's going on?
Oh, my living situation, if you will.
Yeah.
So, as it turns out, like, you know, obviously I'm not from around these parts, but I do a lot of business in Leeds for title wrestling. And when I was here, a lot of the times, like before, like to be fair, the first city that I really was staying in for an elongated period of time was Preston. Shout out to Preston. Shout out to shout out to Johnny Rockets. Some of the best chicken Tuesdays. I missed it. But I was staying with Stephen Flutter, who's the owner and one of the main people behind PCW Preston Championship Wrestling. And, you know, I was staying in his guest room for like a good little while, but it came time that, like all things, you have to branch out and kind of figure out your own thing. So when I came out here in Leeds, there was a place where, you know, we're right next to the Temple of Boom. It's like a rock concert venue and all this other good stuff like that. So they also have a hostel out of here. Hostels are nice places for any American listeners that are watching. Like, you're getting completely thrown by those movies. Stop it. Stop it. It's not like that. It's a money saver. It's great for travelers. Like, get over it. But the owner here, me and him got along really well. And the former occupant that used to be here, there's a lot of times there's a resident that's here at any given time.
Yeah.
She had moved in with her boyfriend. So... it left an open room. So I threw a number and he was okay with the number. So now this is where I'm at. I actually have my own room over here with the bathroom and the kitchen. And then this is subsectioned off, as you see. So sometimes guests are here. Sometimes I get to have my own slumber party and make ports. It's great, man. I love it. So yeah, this is it. I like to affectionately refer to this place as the Trap House, with the German spelling, so H-A-U-S at the end,
nice.
To stylize it. You know?
With an umlaut.
Yes,
How long are you, because we got chatting sort of last year.
Yeah.
And you were here for an extended period of time.
Yes, sir.
And how long are you here for this time?
6 months, so February to July.
Which is, you know, until Brexit kicks in and we kick everybody out. Okay. I hope that never happens.
Better not.
please never make that happen. This is something that one of the interesting reasons that I want to talk to you is anyone who's listening to wrestling podcasts, like Colt Cabana's Art of Wrestling is a great example of this.
That's probably people, the penultimate.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the amount of people who I know from listening to those early episodes made a point of moving to the UK. So Brian Danielson's the example everyone brings up. Chris yes. Hero's another example of people who came to the UK for extended periods of time, did the holiday camps, did as much stuff as possible. Now, obviously, the British wrestling scene is different now because we have a ton of indie wrestling companies that are all doing this.
Oh, absolutely.
But it still doesn't seem that there's not loads of people coming in this direction. It feels it's much more people's ambition to move to the States rather than come here.
Sure.
But, I mean, what was it that sort of drove you to wanting to come here in the first place?
Well, I mean, first of all, like, when I get going, sometimes I get stream of consciousness, so I got to ask this first. Is cursing allowed?
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay, cool, because sometimes I get in a, I get going and stuff starts to coming out, so the Atlanta start coming out, so yeah. So, long story short, just in America, we talked about this a little bit before we recorded. I've been at this since, truth be told, I've been at this since 17. And I don't feel like I was learning anything of worth and getting anywhere until at least 25 or 26 because I had really bad training. So I feel like I'm always trying to make up for lost time and trying to get somewhere. Like, I'm super ambitious. And, I remember a time where, not to get too personal, but I remember a time when I was like 27 when I was talking about by 27, I'd have kids and I'd be doing this and I'd be doing all that. And, I've messed up a lot of personal relationships, like, because I didn't even go to my own high school graduation because, like, there was a booking that night. So, like, I was like, yo, just send me that. Same thing with college. I was like, just mail me my stuff. I don't need to worry about that. I got stuff going on. So, for no matter how silly or bad or, everybody's got an opinion. There's somebody that even hates AJ Styles and I don't even understand how that's a thing. But, for every bad opinion or people who don't think I should be here based off of Twitter or people who feel a way about me, this and that, you'll never know, or I almost don't wish anybody to ever know the amount of sacrifice I had to do just to even be at a point where it's like I'm a mixtape status wrestler, as I like to call it. Like, I feel like there's a lot of guys that are doing way better than me, and that's no issue because I got to own some of my shit, like I was overweight for a time. I wasn't taking my wrestling seriously for a time. I didn't even know who I wanted to be for a time. And I had different levels of that. And it was always bad timing when the opportunity was coming around. So in America, I look at my legacy sometimes and it's like, my legacy is I'm a funny guy. I did a cool Space Jam spot in the ECW arena. But I just felt like it wasn't one of those things where it's like people are ready to take me to be that guy to... Oh yeah, he's PWG bound, or like we got to bring this guy in for CCW stat. Or my biggest claim to fame was like two explosion shots on Impact, which is great, but obviously not enough to get signed. And that's no knock to anybody in any offices anywhere, but you got to start asking questions to yourself. It's like, do you keep trying to water this same plant and you're not bearing the fruits that you want, or is it time to try some different soil? Same plant, different soil. So I've always wanted to do the UK. I did Japan one time before for a week. I did Ireland for 10 days. I just thought it was time to do something different, and I always wanted to go there. I've had a love for World of Sport for the longest time. One of my favorite wrestlers recently was Doug Williams, and I'm proud to be able to say I got to wrestle him twice. And I learned so much in both of those appearances. So I was like, why not go? One of the biggest problems I see with wrestlers nowadays is... again, watering plants in soil where it's not going to grow sometimes. Or so I had that problem when I initially started off in Georgia because a lot of people in the bigger companies wouldn't use me. So I just went anywhere I could. That's how Chikara happened. I sent stuff out, and then, I started doing stuff in Chicago. I started doing stuff in Philly. And then before you know it, that spread out to other places. I was working in other places more than I was in Georgia. So eventually it's like, oh, well, can you come back? We'll finally do some stuff with you now. And it's like, I hate that I had to do all that, but cool. Let's do some stuff. Now it's just a more worldwide version of that. And I went to UK, applied my trade. I did some different stuff. And it still trips me out because, I was only supposed to go for like 1 month just to say I did it. And the love I got between like Preston and Leeds and you know, Lancaster when I was out there for a little bit, and just all the different places. It really changed my view about, man, maybe I could do this. Maybe there is something I need to keep going. And now we're here. We turned February into, you know, 4 months, and then we turned 4 months into 9 months, and then now we're here, you know, collectively. Mm. And now here, I'm about to do 6 uninterrupted months. And, like, you know, I can get off the plane in Manchester. I remember when I first got off the plane in Manchester and couldn't figure out how the train was going to work. And I was getting lost in Mark Adams. God bless him. I was supposed to meet him for a Hope show that day. And I was getting I was getting my ass beat by the train system here. It was bad. Like, it was beating the brakes off of me. And he kept saying, Trafford Bar. If you don't remember where you're going to be at, Trafford Bar. That's why I always reference it every time I can. I even named a move after it because, like, Trafford Bar was my safe zone. And now I went from that to being able to get off a plane in Manchester. I know good and well to go ahead and catch the ticket. We'll catch the ticket to Newcastle, which stops 4 stops to Leeds. You get off at Leeds, 15-minute walk. You go over and you see the Tesco coming down through Victoria Square. You make the turn. You pop over to this beautiful, beautiful furniture store over here, and then you're right next to the Temple of Boom, and you're here. And I feel like it's a part of my DNA now, and I feel like I've been accepted. So now I feel like... this is the strangest odyssey ever for, like, a 33-year-old American black country boy to be over here in Leeds and representing as a champion. Like, I know that's long-winded, but that's...
No, this is the thing that's cool for me is, like, so I was saying to you before, like, I was aware of you from watching you in Chicago.
Yeah.
And partly because of the basketball gimmick, because I'm a big basketball fan.
So, yeah, as, like, you should be. It's a good sport.
So I remember the first time I saw... And also, there's something about names... in Shikara that always, like, did you come up with your own name?
I'm glad you asked. for those who don't know by now, originally when I did the basketball gimmick,
yeah,
it's because I had a series of failed gimmicks before then. And, like, the first trainer that really got me on track, his name is Murder One. He's Blacklist Uno now. They made him change it because everybody's sensitive nowadays. But, I'm just being real. So, we were on a drive to a show in Alabama one day, and this was back during the time when I was in my biker shorts and kick pad era, nice. You know, so that was, yeah, like, I really stood out around then too, you know. So, we're riding, and he's like, man, at the time I had grew my hair out, and it wasn't anywhere near as big as this is, but it was by accident. I couldn't afford haircuts. I was just a college student then, and there wasn't enough money for it. So he was like, man, my dude, you letting your hair all grow out and stuff. He's like, man, you need to let that microphone cap get nice and big, get you a pair of Converse. He said, you could just be doing a basketball gimmick all day long. You should be like a Globetrotter or something. And I'm like, Murder, you're trying to tank my career, dude. It's like, nobody's ever going to take me seriously running around in a ring doing basketball. And then I thought about it, and this is a piece of advice that I feel like a lot of guys can apply to things that they're doing. If you honestly are accountable for what you're doing successfully in your career right now and realize that you're not really all that successful, why the fuck not try some shit?
Yeah.
And at the time, it was like, well, really, I don't have much of a career, so fuck it. Let's try it. So my original name was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Amazing.
Because my real first name, which is amazing to me because everybody swears out my name, like, because of Facebook. Social media is a powerful thing.
Yeah.
Everybody swears out my name is Suge Wilson.
Yeah.
My real name is Jamar. But, like, I love it. I never correct them. Like, I love it. It's great. So, Jamar is my real name, so we went with that. And Disco Inferno actually gave me that name while we were getting ready to work. Disco is a huge... basketball Martin. So he heard it and I didn't have a name yet, and he's bouncing the basketball around while he's talking, and he just came up with it like that. So I was like, awesome, like, we'll run with it, we'll do
and
that.
It's a good pun.
Yeah. Well, and my mom actually was a huge Kareem Abdul-Jabbar fan, so I was like, it covers all the bases. So when Shakara came around, this is what I mean by polite persistence. A lot of people, especially now in wrestling, get butt hurt if they don't get an immediate reply or they get a non-reply from people. It's like there's a lot of factors, especially having lived with a promoter for a while, while sometimes you don't get a reply. You got to get over it.
So this is something I have to explain to people all the time. Yeah. I'm like, I say to, if I go to a wrestling school, I'll say to wrestlers, training wrestlers, I'll say, look, if you want me to give you feedback on a promo or something, it's my job now. So, you know, send it to me. It's cool. But it might take me a week to get back to you because I'm kind of busy. And it's the same. So I'm at Progress. We maybe get like 25 like CVs a week from wrestlers, and we just can't. And some people are genuinely good wrestlers who we might have an interest in using in the future, and we'll try and prioritize replying to them if we can.
Yep.
Some people are mildly delusional and have maybe not even had a match yet and are telling us they should be our champion. That does happen from time to time.
Jesus Christ.
People who haven't understand how wrestling works at all yet. Yeah, I'm really, honestly, emails that say things like, I am really good at wrestling, I should be your champion. Here is a photo. Like, you get shit like that.
Fire Pro Wrestling doesn't count, guy. Like seriously, like, it doesn't. It's not enough. It's not enough, but okay.
But anyway, yeah, but like you said, that thing of, we can't, you do have to be persistent to a point. You have to be persistent, but not a dick.
Absolutely. I mean? Like, it's polite persistence. That's what I like to call it. It's like for instance, I always, after a little while, there were a bunch of promotions, like, when I first came over. Some wouldn't say a thing. I was lucky to get what I got that February. But fortunately, word traveled fast, and then new people started coming in, and people who didn't answer started answering eventually. But that doesn't mean, like, oh, this motherfucker didn't answer me or whatever it is. He doesn't know talent when he see it or this and that and never. Fuck them. I'll figure it out. I'll do what I do. It's like, no, you didn't answer. Okay. I'll hit you again in 2 months. I'll hit you again in 3 months. Stuff changes.
I used to have to do that with stand-up.
Yeah.
Like, every time I applied to do the comedy store in London, they wouldn't always reply. So I see it from the point of view of someone trying to get work as well as someone who gives work.
And furthermore, living with Flutter was very, very enlightening because he showed me the inbox of PCW. Mm. He gets 50 things in that inbox at any given time. Half of them, yes, CVs. The other half, crazy stuff or business-related stuff. And what a lot of geniuses tend to forget, especially because we live in the cell phone era, everybody wants instant everything, and it's immediately this terrible thing where people have to stop everything they're doing in the moment to reply to you, and I can't always do that. Sometimes I don't want to do that, so, like, get over yourself for a minute. It's one of those cases where, okay, yes, you may have sent me your resume or your promo or whatever it is first thing in the morning, 8 a.m. The promomer might wake up 1 p.m. You know, he had a bender the night before. It happens. It happens. So you sent one at 8 a.m. Another guy's thinking he's on top of it 8:30 a.m. He sends one in. Another guy, 9 o'clock. Another guy, 9:05. Before he wakes up, there's 25 messages in there. Yours immediately went to the bottom, and there's 24 people on top of you. And he might get bored after going through 5 or 6, so sometimes you get lost in averages. It happens. Like, after you start getting to that point of realizing that, you just kind of get over yourself, and you just have to be politely persistent. So in the case of Chikara, what happened was, I always wanted to work Chikara. The first King of Trios, I watched the very first King of Trios they had, and I was hooked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was just buying all their stuff and everything because at the time, I'd never seen wrestling like that before. I love big characters. They were doing, like, early 90s and late 80s WWE references, which is right up my alley.
Yeah, me too.
I needed that in my life. I was like, if I'm ever going to work one place, I got to fucking work there, right? So I started emailing Mike Quackenbush matches. And back then, it wasn't as easy as a YouTube link and all that other stuff like that. You got to burn your own DVDs. You got to edit out the matches, all that other stuff like that. You mail it off. You ship it off. So it's not cheap, you know, when you get ready to do it. Like, people complaining about an email that takes, like, 5 minutes to draft. You know, like, you really wanted to get around back then, you do 25 DVDs, 25 different shipping things, and you shoot them out. You know, you get addresses, you're hunting and all that stuff. People don't know, man. And it was even worse before then because it was VHS.
Yeah.
So you had to dub your own tape. Like, that was oh, my God, that's a whole nother story. I sent him a DVD a week for 12 weeks straight. He finally emailed me back, and he was like, listen, I'm sure you're a nice enough guy. If I promise to watch this DVD, "Will you please stop sending me DVDs?" And I'm like, "Absolutely." He said, just tell me what doesn't work, what doesn't work, and I'm off your back. He actually watched it, and he actually liked it. And he was like, "Your timing for this couldn't be better, by the way, because we're just about to debut a baseball character. And you know how we're very much on teams and atomicals and stuff like that. I think you two could be a good fit if it gels, you know?"
Yeah.
So he's like, "Yeah." He's like, let's see if we can get you up here for a few days to see how it fits, see how it gels." He's like, "But one thing, we got to change the name." And I'm like, "Okay, what's the issue with the name?" He's like, "I feel like you have one of those names where it's like, oh, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, ha, ha, ha. Or it's, oh, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar." So he's like, we just got to get something I feel that'll be a little bit more marketable. I'm like, okay. Have you ever seen the movie Semi-Pro?
I have, yes.
One of the nicknames of Andre 3000's character as he's cycling through names on that, Sugar Dunkerton. And it's not something where they can make a copyright claim or anything like that, because it wasn't like the actual character's name. It was just a moniker. So
also, there's the Atlanta connection as well there, isn't there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Outkast.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Plus, Andre 3000 is like one of my favorites. Like, he is my top rapper, like, ever of all time.
He's the second coming of James Brown, is one of my favorites.
Bro. Bro, that's a whole nother podcast. We get into it. Plus, I'm from Augusta, so that's James Brown's hometown. We literally have, like, the James Brown statue and everything. Oh, like, amazing. Yeah. It's part of the reason why I took the name. I'm a big World of Sport fan, but I'm also from, they call it the Soul City, Augusta, Georgia. So that's why I took the nickname the Soul of Sport. So, like, it's a combination of the two things. I think it works. But we ran with Sugar Dunkerton. I threw him a bunch of names. Sugar Dunkerton was the one he liked the best. It was a tie. So here's how the timelines could have altered. Sugar Dunkerton in this timeline and in the other Spider-Verse, it would have been Shawty Roosevelt. S-H-A-W-T-Y. Like, Shawty, like the way we say it back in Atlanta. Like, Shawty Roosevelt. Murder wanted that one bad because he always wanted to chant. He was like, he always wanted to chant, "Go Shawty! Go Shawty!" during a match. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. And we got left with Sugar Dunkerton. So, but that worked. Everything took off, as you can see. But it's a cautionary tale a little bit, too, because there were glimpses of me moving beyond the cartoon character in Chikara. Mm-hmm. Like, I had that match with Brody Lee, who we now know as Luke Harper in WWE. And a lot of people really gave me compliments on that one, because that was like a real brawl, and like one of the first few matches I wasn't like clowning, you know, and people knew, it's like, hey, maybe there's more to this guy than what we were thinking. And I get little glimpses of that, but I hate to say it, but I mean, I'm just being truthful. I don't know if he had the faith in me to deliver when it came time to be able to do stuff like that. And part of it, I'll admit, it's an accountability thing. I could have been in better shape. You know, I wasn't as mature as I could have been in some cases, but even still, it's like sometimes you got to give that guy a chance to sink or swim.
Yeah.
Didn't come together. And eventually when I left, I started spreading my wings. But the thing about it was, I had been defined by the more cartoonish stuff for so long. I don't think people saw me as the full character yet.
Mm.
So it kind of limited what I was able to do. So I had to make a lot of changes and go a lot of different roads and try to figure some stuff out. And the latest change, which I think has been the best one, has been eventually just switching over to Trunks, you know?
Yeah.
Because now I still got my personality, but, you know, I look more like a wrestler now. I took my shape more seriously, all that. Because I think what really, really brought it together was I came home from the third tour, and I learned all this new stuff, all these new transitions and holds and suplexes and stuff. And I went to Glory Pro. At the time, I was still wearing like Argyle disco pants and all that other stuff like that. So the crowd's watching, and it's like, I think they're appreciating what they're seeing, but at the same time, you still a dude in disco pants trying to put on like heel hooks and knee bars and stuff. And you can only take that so seriously. It's kind of like if somebody said they're going to do brain surgery and they show up in like a farmer's overalls and like, you know, some Crocs, and they're like, "Hey man, we're about to do some surgery today." And it's like, nah, you don't look the part, bro. I'll wait. I'll reschedule. I'll take the next guy that comes in, you know? So I had to kind of switch it up a little bit. So it's me, but it's more to the point. And now I think it's coming across a little bit better. So yeah. And now here we are. I'm out of here.
So, with it being from Georgia,
yep.
Like, and obviously, Atlanta was where everyone from WCW was based in the,
yes,
in, sir.
The end of power the plant. 90s. Power plant, then.
So, you know, and still, I know lots of people who still live out there now because it was where everyone was based.
Yep.
But you were saying there wasn't, I mean, I presume there was a scene in Georgia when you first started, sort of 16, 17 years ago.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
But it wasn't something that was easy to break into, if you like.
Yeah, like the Georgia scene, and don't get me wrong, I'm gonna lay this out flat before I even get into anything. If you're talking about starting off in wrestling, Georgia's a hell of a scene to get started because fundamentals, learning to work your character, learning how to work a crowd, learning how to work TV cameras. Mm-hmm. There's a whole another difference between just working a live show and working for TV.
Absolutely.
You'll get all that experience down there. It's awesome. Like, I feel like if you need to know how to be a complete wrestler, fundamentally, Georgia is a great place as any, like, to get started. But yes, in terms of breaking in, even kind of now, they still got kind of a mold that they like. And the other thing about it is Georgia was very hard to, what's the word I'm looking for? You started looking at other places, as far as, no pun intended, to progress. Mm. Because the thing about it was, while up north and Midwest and California were catching up to like VHS and moving to DVD, starting streaming services, like, they're always ahead of the curve. Mm. And those were always the places where you went to get seen to go to the other bigger places. Georgia was kind of like, you go here to cut your teeth. You go here, like, you know, if you want to work X, like NWA or WCW guy, just kind of doing the rounds or whatever it is. But that's not where you go to get indie clout.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times it was like, oh, this guy's got a good body. We don't know if he could work, but let's throw him in there and see what he can do, all this other stuff like that. And I think the closest we came to really being on the radar was Deep South Wrestling, when they had that for a time in WWE Developmental.
Yes.
But even then, Deep South Wrestling, for as good as the talent was down there, a lot of people will tell you horror stories from it. It wasn't, development around that time still had its share of horror stories. Mm. But you know, Deep South, I heard, was some of the worst when it came down to that. So it's like, that's kind of a bit where it came and went. So with Georgia, it's just a lot of those guys were guys that were kind of plying their trade until something bigger popped off, or which was an indie out there, or at the time TNA comes calling, mm-hmm. or let me just ply my trade enough so I'm close enough to Florida for when WWE calls.
Yeah.
Little stuff like that. Yeah.
Because I think in the UK we look at it and just go, British people often forget how big America is.
Bro.
and like, so just going, hey, I'm from Georgia, I'm going to go and wrestle in Philadelphia for Shikara is not, it's not. And when you're on the indies, it's not always a case of people paying to put you on a plane and stuff like that. Sometimes it's get all your shit in a car and drive, right?
So this is about to break me into one of my favorite rules about wrestling in a minute. But I remember the first time coming over here and people telling me about how public transport worked and just how big the country was. I was expecting way more in terms of like how big because of where I come from. So the longest car ride I've ever done by myself to a show is 16 hours one way.
Yeah.
When somebody put it in perspective, they were like, you could have driven the whole of England, like, around, you could have been around it three times in that length, or almost about.
So whenever I'm with American friends and we have this discussion, like, when I was doing stand-up, I used to complain about driving 1,000 miles a week. I was driving 1,000 miles a week to do 4 or 5 shows.
Yep.
And part of that is because I choose to live in North Wales rather than live in a big population centre like London or Manchester. So I was doing a lot of miles, and I complained about it. And I remember, I'll drop a name, but I was supporting Mick Foley on tour.
Oh, boy.
And I was saying to him, he was like, I turned up to a show and I was all frazzled. He was like, you got to drive a long way? I was like, yeah, I've been in my car for 4 hours. And it did go into, you don't even know you're born. I was drove across Canada. I drove across Canada when there was literally no scenery.
Yep.
It was just, we drove from one side to the other. There's a really famous Monty Python sketch that I recommend you look up called The Four Yorkshiremen, which is especially out with you.
And I'm a big fan of Monty Python too. So this is from what? Or is this the sketch show?
It's from the TV series.
I've never watched the TV show.
Okay. It's on Netflix, right?
So, perfect.
And their sketch they do is The Four Yorkshiremen, and it's just about four Yorkshiremen all comparing how hard their upbringing was. And it starts off with someone going, yeah, I used to have to work 12 hours a day down the mill. And it finishes with like one guy going, I used to have to work 27 hours a day down the mill and pay me load of permission to come to work. And when we got home, our mother and father would kill us and dance on our graves singing hallelujah. Like, it's that level of escalation.
I love it.
And if you get enough wrestlers from America in a room to talk about car journeys, they will go, oh yeah, I've driven 16 hours straight. Which for us, like, if I drove 16 hours straight from here, I'd probably get to Moscow.
Yeah, like, dude. It makes me wish I knew how to drive these roads. Like, honestly, y'all's driving scene frightens the hell out of me. It reminds me of like every Jason Statham movie where he's got to get in a car and he's boom boom boom, he's moving around and you got the traffic circles and everything's going. I'm like, I can't do it. I'm not ready for it yet. Like, I can't. But I promise you, if I knew how to drive here, I would probably try to break Ligero's schedule. And like, that is the busiest damn man in the world. Like, in the world.
Also, he couldn't drive for a long time.
Are you serious?
Seriously, he learned. I swear he's learned to drive in the time I've known him. Ligero, correct us on this. But I swear he's only been driving for maybe 3 or 4 years. I could be wrong, but I'm certain he only learned to drive fairly late on.
Okay.
Which is even more insane. And it's the same for like wrestlers like Pete Dunne. I don't think he's been driving very long.
Before I knew how short the distances were, I swore there was more than one Ligero. like I thought there was three of them and they're just pulling the money together.
Yeah, he's like Ultimate Warrior in 1992. Like, he's definitely died and been reincarnated at least once.
We all try to forget the warrior with the baseball cap. We all try to forget that. That was a very bad fashion mistake of his.
Where was the 16-hour drive between?
Northern Indiana,
yep.
Southern Florida. Yeah, dude.
When we did the US tour last year, like we did bus journeys after shows.
Yeah.
Which is, it sounds horrible, but it's actually better waking up in a new city and having some time to rest before
you. Absolutely, and you're not doing the driving.
Yeah, precisely. So we get on this bus, we did a show in Chicago, and then we got a bus from Chicago to Detroit. Mm-hmm. And again, British people look at a map and go, how far can it be? And like 8 hours later, when you're like,
yeah.
And I had Google Maps on my phone so I could know how far. You leave a show at like 11 and you arrive at like 7 a.m. and you're like, oh, this is really far.
Dude, if it weren't for Spotify, like if it weren't for Spotify, I'd quit. Like, I'd seriously quit. And it leads me back to what I was talking about before about, I love talking about the clout system in wrestling sometimes. Your treatment can drastically change. Like, you know, in a lot of cases to me, I feel like you know how they feel about you or you know how they feel about your worth based off of how they're arranging you to get there sometimes.
Yeah.
So, like, I believe clout drives a lot of things in entertainment, especially wrestling, right? Mm. So one of my favorite clout rules of all time, I change it every few years because the person changes every few years. So there's always, like, a top guy in indie wrestling. So for a while, it was the Chris Hero rule.
Yeah.
Then for a while, it was the Matt Riddle rule. Now, I'm still trying to change it. I think I'm going to call it the Shane Strickland rule because I like him and he's like everywhere, Shane. Right? Everybody loves Shane. Right? He's the man. So the rule is, would I be going through this if I were Chris Hero, Matt Riddle, Shane Strickland? And you got to be realistic. They're at the top of their field. But you got to look at some of the stuff you go through. Like, for instance, if I were Shane Strickland and they were asking me to drive 16 hours, knowing good and well I'm driving 16 hours, not with anybody else in the car, and they want to offer me $50 American, no other trans, no hotel, no other stuff like that, but it's a great opportunity. It's a great opportunity. You, like, dude, if I feel like if everybody in entertainment, and I always try to keep it blanket when I say that, artist, rapper, you know, actor, whatever. If we had to pool all of our opportunity together and everything like that, we could have universal health care for everybody in the world. It would work. The opportunity bucks would pay for it.
Well, so this is something that often new wrestlers will say to me, oh, have you got any advice? And I always say, read Mick Foley's first autobiography.
Damn right.
But I also say the same thing to new comedians because it's the same principle. Thing. Like, when I started comedy, this is something I remember very specifically. My first 100 gigs that I did, Nearly all of them were unpaid. I earned £70 in total for 100 shows because Jesus of the Christ. Open mic system,
yeah,
where you know you just have to go and be seen, and I was entering competitions and whatever. And bearing in mind, I did well out of my first 100 gigs. I got the competition finals and stuff, right? So I didn't completely suck. First 100 gigs, earned £70 in total. I drove 27,000 miles to do that. And nearly everyone was an opportunity. And even towards the end of my comedy, my full-time comedy career,
yeah,
I would still get promoters go, like, try and offer me a lot less than I should work for, because they were one of the first people who ever gave me a free gig. And it's still that, I gave you that opportunity, can you not do it as a favour? No. I have two children.
Got bills and stuff, man. Like, and I went full time with this over a year ago. Like, I was working at a major cell phone company. You know, I'm making good money. But I wasn't happy, I wasn't fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And I knew if I didn't take this chance, because I was juggling both. And it goes back to, like, my life balance because, you know, it was either I was obsessed about trying to move up in work or I was obsessed with trying to move up in wrestling. Yeah. And when you had the two of them going at the same time, literally one of my weekends was like this. I would get off work on a Thursday. Say my first show was in Chicago. So you drive all the way to Chicago for 12 hours, do your deal. Oh, and you didn't get that work request that you wanted off, so you do need to come in Saturday. So now you come in, you do your match, you drive 12 hours back so that you can do an 8-hour shift handling money and other people in various situations on no sleep.
Oh, mate.
And then you finally can go to sleep, like little stuff like that. And a lot of people just didn't know, man. Like, they didn't know. It's like now, that's why I appreciate it. If somebody says, like, oh, it's rough being on a train or a bus or whatever it is, hell no. I get to rest. I get to read. I get to the show. I'm wired. I'm ready to do whatever you want to do. I'm not too tired to not do what you want to do. Mm. And, but I'll never take back any of that, because if I didn't go through all the weird stuff, I wouldn't even appreciate it at when you get this kind of stuff coming together.
It's such a dad thing for me to say, but it's character building.
Yeah.
Like, if I'd have started stand-up and just gone straight into doing really well, likewise, as a wrestling promoter, if I'd gone straight into making money as opposed to losing money for like a year and a half, 2 years, like, how would I? You'd never move forward.
There you go.
You know, you need to do that. You mentioned before, you missed your own high school graduation to wrestle. Can you remember who you wrestled? It's one of those things I was like, I have to ask if you can remember who you wrestled.
I think it was Studley Dudley around that time or whatever it is. I got a funny story about him in a minute. Studley Dudley was like, I think he was like a part-time computer programmer or something like that. Like, he was like a big dude, nerdish face.
Yeah.
So they just put some broken glasses on him, made him like a, you know, because there were Dudley boys everywhere. So they just made him a Dudley boy.
It was a really easy gimmick to do.
Yeah, you know. And like, he just did the whole deal and everything like that. His claim to fame was going to NWA Wild Side, which is now NWA Anarchy. That's where AJ Styles cut his teeth out in Cornelia, Georgia. They would have tryout shows on Fridays. So, you know, he's puffing his chest up, I'm the NWF hardcore champion in front of like 50 people. You know, they need to know what I can do. So he goes out there, and lo and behold, his tryout match is New Jack of all people.
Oh, God.
He's just, New Jack's riding through. They needed a little star power on the show. Let's put New Jack on. First of all, I love me some New Jack. New Jack is cool as shit. New Jack ain't one to fuck with, though. So, like, he's testy. Like, there's some stuff I can't believe sets him off, and there's some stuff that's like, you know,
I have a real story that happened between me and New Jack.
Yeah.
He got offended that I wouldn't drink with him, bearing in mind I'm a recovered alcoholic. And he got really annoyed until I explained. I used to tell the story on stage.
Yeah.
He got really annoyed until I explained explained why.
Okay.
But he did insist on calling me a pussy for the rest of the evening.
Sounds about right.
He was actually a sweetheart. He was very softly spoken, which I did not expect.
Yeah.
Like, he was. But he bought drinks for everybody.
And
like, he bought literally 40 shots for a table of like 8 people at Colt's $5 Wrestling.
People don't even know in some cases about him. And the other thing too is, really savvy about wrestling up here. It's just, he got paid good money to walk around and hit people with guitars while NWA was playing. So, like, it was what it was. So, he gets in the ring with Studley, and I think Studley, like, supremely screws up the first few things and then messes up and potatoes him. So, you know, with New Jack, if you give him potatoes, he about to make French fries. So, like it's like he went in, beat the dog shit out of Stelly. Like, Stelly never got handled like this before. Like, he got straight handled, dog walked the whole match, right? Stelly comes to the back. He's looking lumped up, right? And he's just sitting down, and it's like, I wish this was a video podcast so you can see it. But he's just sitting down, like, you know how, like, when you're waiting on the principal and you know you fucked up? So he's just sitting down, and he's just, like, you know, waiting. New Jack comes back. I got to put my best New Jack voice on. So New Jack comes back, and he's just looking at him, and he's walking past him. Because he's trying to find the words. And he's like, so you got any advice for me in the match? He's like, do I got advice for you? He's like, motherfucker. He's like, you ain't got no business being up in the motherfucking ring with me. He's like, well, is it possible that maybe, like, you know, you could train me or something like that? Motherfucker. He's like, let me tell you something. He's like, I be doing pay-per-view. He's like, I'm on video games. All this other shit. I ain't got time to be training your punk ass. He's like, you need to be out the motherfucking business. Matter of fact, I see your ass back here again. He was letting him fucking have it. Studley was done by then. My personal New Jack story is, my personal favorite New Jack story is, I don't know if you guys ever watched the one that he did with Dr. Keith, where it was, he wasn't even on that one. He was doing a shoot interview with Raven and Sandman, and
I may well have seen
it. It was a bar, and they were drinking while they were doing it. Mustafa and New Jack crashed the shoot, and it infinitely got better because they didn't want to say anything. They were just drinking. New Jack comes in and, like, turns the place up, right? So one of the stories he tells is how he kept how he messed up Terry Funk's retirement speech. Terry Funk, like, his umpteenth retirement or whatever, yeah. It is. That was the joke, too. So he looks at the camera during it, and he's like, Terry Funk, I'm sorry. He's like, I'm sorry, okay? I didn't know. I thought you were just bullshitting about this retirement, too. You know what I'm saying? So I said what I was saying. I was drunk. Yeah, I was drunk. And the whole time he would talk about something, but then he flipped back. He's like, yeah, you know, at this point in my career in Smoky Mountain, and I just also want to point out, Terry Funk, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do it. He did it like 5 or 6 times. So we had an in-joke. Where if you really were sorry about something, you have to say, Terry Funk, I'm sorry. It's not a real apology unless you say, Terry Funk, I'm sorry. So I had a 6-man tag where, you know, the old squash, you know, the enhancement match. And one of the guys was his trainee. Another guy was tagging with his trainee. And then there was me. And, like, you know, he was always cordial with me, and I appreciated that about him. So, before the match started, the three of us put our hands in. I was like, okay, everybody, on three, we're going to say Terry Funk, we sorry. And they were mortified because the match is about to go on. It's like, no, we shouldn't do it. We shouldn't do that. It's like New Jack probably wouldn't like that. I said, he's not here right now. It'll be fine. They can't hear us anyway. He's like, 1, 2, 3, Terry Funk, I'm sorry. We go through the match. We get killed. We come to the back. All we hear, they're giving us critique on the match. And then all we hear from around the corner is, say, where the fuck them boys at? I'm like, oh, shit. Everybody like, oh, shit. He come around, and he's looking around. He said, which one of y'all motherfuckers was talking about Terry Funk? I'm motherfucking sorry. He said, which one of y'all thought that shit was funny as fuck? And then, of course, they're young. They dime me out. They're just looking over on this end. And I'm like, yeah, I did it, man. He said, shut up, Dr. T, you a funny motherfucker, man. That's why I fuck with you, dog. He said, you cool as shit. He said, why y'all motherfuckers ain't even think of that shit? So now they mad because they couldn't get the clock points off of it because he came in mad as hell. But, like, that was always my relationship with New Jack. I like him a lot. Like, I think the world of him when it's all said and done. But I guess rounding back. So I look at how that clout system works sometimes, especially, like, in terms of pay and stuff like that in the locker room. I've literally had promoters sometimes when you hit them up about, hey, I need a little bit extra or this and that, you know, at least something to go ahead and cover it or whatever it is. They're talking about how they lost their ass or this and that, or they've already paid enough on payroll. But let's be real. You look at some of the cards sometimes and it's like, we know exactly where all your payroll went, especially when you got a certain kind of flights, you got a full hotel for such and such. You're making sure everything's all good, but then you got to come to certain people and talk about you're going to PayPal them in 2 weeks. Or, I don't have the money for you right now, but I'll give you this book and then we'll double up on that or whatever it is. I wish there was a system where, because, you know, all my money comes from this now.
Yeah.
So my deal is, it's like, if you're late on that, like, who's like, are you going to pay me the interest are you going to pay me interest on it because of the late fee on the credit card that I have to pay or the stuff that I got going on at home or whatever? But it's stuff that you chalk it up to the game. And it's rules to the game that, like, it could piss you off sometimes, but I keep believing it'll be better and it'll work itself out. And I feel like sometimes you have to go through that, because then when you get to the point where hopefully it's all coming in, you're not starstruck, you're not treating people a weird way, you actually know how to hold your money and retain your money because you went through times where you didn't have it or you didn't know if it was coming in and all that good stuff. So
I think the terrifying thing for me whenever I hear people talking about the American indie wrestling landscape is that thing you said of you driving 16 hours, no transport costs, literally, like, and people do it because wrestling's a competitive field where people want to get noticed.
Yeah.
But, like, here, the idea of Progress not paying people, like, for their transport and stuff like that, like, makes me feel sick. Because in comedy, the difference between comedy and wrestling is we never used to get our transport. We occasionally get hotels covered.
Okay.
If you're working somewhere for a weekend. But most of the time, you won't get your transport costs covered.
Sure.
But the average, and also comedy clubs set the fee. I don't set my fee. A comedy club tells me what it pays, and it's up to me whether I say yes or no.
Okay.
And as a rule, it's better paying than an indie wrestler's getting. Right.
I bet.
Not loads, but it certainly for bigger clubs. You're talking the average wage for a Friday or Saturday night gig is £250.
Okay.
Right. But no one's paying my transport, so you have to work out a cheap way of getting there and shit like that. But knowing that people, when they're starting out, are saying, "Oh, my fee's $50, and yeah, I'll just get there." And I know that a lot of people do that thing where they fucking carpool and stuff like that. But if you're doing 16-hour trip and then still going to work.
Sometimes I couldn't carpool because there were times where I carpooled and I can't tell you how many jobs I almost got fired from because we didn't make it back on time or somebody fell asleep or somebody doesn't drive as fast as other people in the car and all this other stuff like that. So it's just little stuff like that. And I don't know, but it's like I did my share of that, and not saying that I won't do my share of that when I am at home. You know, you got to go ahead and do that. But I want my bumps to count for something. I don't want to just say that I did it and it's like, yeah, I did all those car trips or whatever it is. Because at the end of the day, it's like, again, if I'm delaying the wife and kids thing and, you know, trying to settle down and all that other stuff like that, it's like, what do you have to show for it when it's all said and done? And I finally feel like I'm at a point where, yeah, this is the time where it's like, are you going to go for a contract? Or are you going to go for being like a high-level indie guy? Of course, you always got that in the back of your head where you think you're the guy to do it, but you got to be accountable enough to be like, okay, but can you? Like, really? Like, if you would you want to watch you at this point? And I feel like a lot of guys don't do that.
And you got to be realistic enough to work hard as well. There's this... Nearly everybody I come across in wrestling is willing to work hard. Occasionally, I will come across people who have this weird sense of entitlement of, well, everyone else is successful, so I should be successful as well. No. You've got to work your ass off.
They don't owe you nothing.
Yeah. And you're a prime example of this. Someone you've plied your trade for a long time, and you've got. And this is the cool thing. Like, you being in the UK now, I think it's interesting how many people will mention you to me. And obviously, we've been chatting for a while, and I know who you are. But the amount of people who go, "Hey, have you seen this guy?" And I'll be like, "Well, yeah." but it's interesting that you've started building that reputation in this country, you know, 4,000 miles away from where you're from.
Yeah.
I think that's testament to your hard work. You've not come here and gone, right, I'm going to come here and I'm only going to work for these companies and I want to be treated like this. You've gone, no, I'm coming in here, I'm going to come in on the ground level, I'm going to work my ass off, which is...
It's funny you mentioned that too, because, like, okay, back to the clout system again. Mm. I don't have it like Shane Strickland. Mm. So, like, He can come in and get used for Fight Club or whatever, but at the same time, it's like there was a time where it wasn't always like that for Shane. Mm-hmm. A lot of people forget that, and a lot of people sometimes when they get in their feelings about why does this guy get this and why does he get that, that's not me knocking that they got it like that, but you also got to look like, hey, this is what they mean to the bottom line, or this is how they move the needle. So, like, he can just walk into Fight Club Pro or something like that, and they see that his message comes across, you're going to answer, because he can move the needle. Me, I'm a guy looking for an opportunity to be able to move the needle for you, but you gotta let me in. But the thing about it is, a lot of the times, it's a constant state of having to prove why you should let me in so I can do that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be super realistic to you, and I'm saying this as a worker. I'm saying this to you as a hopeful promoters, hopefully somebody I'll work under when it's all said and done one day. It's one of those cases where, you know, I've been on a lot of car rides with people who, you know, a lot of car rides, built a lot of relationships with people that are getting their due. Like, you know, I did the long car rides with Cedric. I did the long car rides with UHA Nation, now Apollo. AR Fox, who, even though he doesn't have a deal, should have one, but he, at least he's everywhere.
He worked for us when we were in the States.
There you go.
And did a great job.
There you go. Like is a little bit of everywhere. Jonathan Grisham, who's now, just now, he's been that good.
Yeah.
But he's just now, people starting to pay attention. Like, wrestling is weird like that to me. It's like, this guy's been that good. It's just you're finally watching him on stuff that everybody watches. So now you're in agreement with it. You know what I'm saying? It's been tough watching a lot of them be like signing those deals and moving on and doing what they got to do. Ali, like, I'm happy to see him doing what he's doing. We became good friends in Chicago, all that good stuff like that through freelance. I feel like sometimes, yeah, I can relate to what you're saying. All these people that I've been cool with and all this other stuff are doing stuff. I should be able to just get that too. Doesn't work like that, because there's a lot of times while they were working on their physique, I wasn't. Or while they were working on being in the ring all the time to learn new holds or do this or do that, I wasn't. So I had to really start putting foot to ass to kind of put it together. And it's one of those cases where, yeah, I get left out of a lot of conversations when it comes to like who's the next guy to look for, or who's the next guy that can move the needle or get a contract or get some ink. Does that discourage me? In the back of my mind, sometimes, but at the end of the day, I know what my life is. I was always kind of the guy that nobody really took as a front runner. Or as the joke I always made was, like, if girls, especially back then, if girls talked to me, I was always the personality guy. I wasn't like the guy that they walked in the room and be like, oh my God, damn, he is fine. Like, I hope he talked to me. I'm always the guy that's like, that's just Suge. And then they get to know me, and I make them laugh a little bit, and they get to know me. Right. Then it's like, damn, where has he been and everything? Like, I win them over. Yeah, it gets a little shitty sometimes. It'd be nice for somebody to just be like, oh damn, like Suge is fine. Let me throw something at him or whatever it is. But like, again, Bill's character, you got to do what you got to do. Plus, I just want it, dude. And it's one of those cases where, you know, I did the Impact thing. They didn't quite see it enough to throw me a deal. Cool. I'm not mad at them. They just didn't see it. Like, it is what it is. I appreciate it. It helped me move forward to be able to get out here, because there were some people that even saw it. So that was even good in theory. My thought process is, this is a whole wide world. And when wrestling grew, it's not just growing in America. It grew everywhere else. Mm-hmm. So why not come to the UK? They got WOS here. They have you guys here. I recently got on with ICW, and there's some stuff in the with the works going in there. In all honesty, my thought process is this. You got a whole scene that everybody has the eyes of the world on, right? So instead of sticking to this deal like I was talking about, where I have a plant that I've been trying to put in this soil and it won't take, I've given you everything for like the longest amount of time. I've given you me. For the longest amount of time, I've given you more miles and more blood left and weird stuff. You know, I got plates and screws in my arm from just trying to work it out. You know, why not go someplace else? Make so much noise to the point of people being like, damn, why didn't we realize that he was trying to do this over here with us? And maybe you'll figure it out, you know? So it's just one of those cases where I'm just trying to bust my ass to try to make that work. And it's like, yeah, I've always wanted to do progress. I still have the email from 2012. I think it was like 2011, 2012, where I tried to email you guys. And it was like, y'all weren't even at the point where y'all could fly people in yet.
Oh, so no, that was when we never used imports.
Yeah.
Yeah, when right at the beginning.
I think the first import I can recollect y'all using was Ricochet.
I think you're probably... I mean, we used Colt on the first show, but that was to
say... Colt was everybody's.
Yeah. I mean, it was essentially British.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, probably Ricochet was probably the next one.
Sure.
And we accidentally used Adam Cole because he was already in the country.
Okay, but that's a great accident to have. He's an awesome dude. I love him.
Yeah.
But it was just one of those cases where I still had the email from the first Progress show I emailed, like, back then and whatnot. And to be fair, I'm kind of glad it didn't happen because, like, when I look back at it, especially at that time, I wasn't ready. Mm. There was a lot of stuff, like, where the opportunity came together, I wasn't ready. I can't stress and harp on opportunity enough because there's a lot of great guys, not just me, but a lot of great guys out of there. And just because they're not getting gift, like, readily, or they're not working certain places or whatever it is, I think some people just think, like, the opportunity is not there. And it's like there's a lot of hidden gems, or there's just waiting for that one thing to pop off to turn into something. So I just applied the hustle that I got from over there to here. And so far, so good. Like, it's been working out. I've been doing my best to stay healthy, try to impress everywhere that I possibly can and whatnot. But, like, honestly, if I were talking about my lofty goal, I'm rolling up the sleeves because this is the one where everybody's like, you're out of your mind. But it's like, fuck it. Why not? My goal, my ultimate goal, and I might hit a number of things on the way to getting to it. My ultimate goal, even if I fail, is if they do a UK tournament again, I want to be so respected and regarded out here in this particular scene. That even if they were like, but no, he's American, they're like, but no, he's a part of the UK scene. Yeah, you know. So, yeah, we're going to give him a shot. Because I can't imagine, you know, and at the end of the day, like, WWE and whatnot is about stories when it's all said and done. Like, what story is not to tell about a 33-year-old Georgia black dude who watched World of Sport on YouTube and, like, tape compilations from high spots and stuff like that, who felt like he was never going to get his chance in America. So he took a chance on himself, and he came over on a ticket for 1 month that he had to pay for himself. Yeah, I'm not afraid to say that. I paid for it myself. You know, I haven't paid for it since then, but I took that risk, like, to go ahead and do that. And, like, I feel like people are scared to take those risks on themselves, and they want everything laid out. Like, people message me now all the time about what to do to get over here and everything like that. And to be honest, it's like, you have to give them something that they don't have already. It's like, there's a lot of great talents over there, but it's like, I love the fact that UK has become self-aware of the fact that it's like, we can do it on our own. Like, what are you bringing us that's so different that we cover the flight, we do this, we do all of that. And I just want to get to a point where I'm having the right matches, making the right moments, doing the right things, to the point where if that UK tournament comes up, fuck yeah, put Suge in. You know, like even if he's a first round out, screw it. He made it. He tried it. He did his thing. I just want to prove that there's more to what I got going on than just that basketball bit from the ECW arena.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
And the whole point about you feeling like you're part of the furniture here, I think the interesting thing about it is when you messaged me and said, I'm back in the UK from this point, is it never clicked with me that you weren't here, because I just presumed you were here all the time now. Like, because it had got to that point when, you know, when you see that your diary is pretty full, and you're working for a lot of cool companies, and you're doing a lot of cool stuff, you know, you are slotting in and being part of the furniture here, which has happened with, it's how Daniel Bryan was thought of here. It's how Chris Hero was thought of here for a long time. All the guys who did the camps. Have you done any camp shows?
Not yet. It's a rite of passage. So I want to do it. But it's like the mafia, like, trying to get in those things. You got to know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody that gave blood to get into something like that. So we're working on it. We'll see. But I stay very busy, and, like, it's been lucrative enough where I still got a place back in Georgia. Like, that's my main place. And what I like about this place is, we've worked out a good enough deal where he doesn't make me pay on it when I'm not here.
Yeah.
So that works out too. But when I'm done with this one, I'm here from February to July. I'll go home for a little bit, but I'll be right back over for, like, another 3 or 4 months after that. So, yeah. Like, you know, and I'm here on work visa, so I'm legal to use. I just want to throw that out there. So yeah, go ahead.
I do think that whole thing of people taking, I mean, the flip side of this is British people going to America. So
sure.
The famous one is Mark Andrews, Pete Dunne, etc., going out and wrestling.
They came through freelance in Chicago,
And they did Chicago and places like that.
Yeah.
They made a point of, and at the time it was frowned upon. It was like, you can't fly yourself out there. But from my point of view, like I was explaining the comedy thing before, I was like, well, I always got myself to places because I wanted to impress. You don't want people to take the piss out of you and want you to work for free all the time. But
yeah.
it worked out with those guys, it's working out for you.
And the thing is, it's like with that kind of situation, it's like I'm in a situation where like people know me, but they don't know me. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those. That's what I mean by I always make the joke on mixtape rapper status. It's like I've had some hot mixtapes. No major label has really given me like a shot yet. So I don't have that one single that everybody knows. I haven't even had the chance to be a one hit wonder yet. That's what I'm getting at. Yeah. Like I'll take that chance, but I got to get the chance first. But at the meantime, you still got to put in the work, you know, for everybody to go ahead and do that. And it's like if there's not enough people that are willing to take the chance on it, it's like you have to take a chance on yourself. You know, eventually, and like it works itself out. We hear stories about it all the time, about how many people are really applying it. Mm. And I'm happy that it worked itself out. Like I found something different out here, and I've had a chance to really get in touch with who I am and myself. And I feel like I get to be the best version of myself sometimes out here. So this is good. Is it tough because I'm away? Like, you know, I had a brand new niece. My brother just had a brand new niece. You know. Is it tough being away during her formative years? Yeah. Mom finally kind of understands what's going on with wrestling, and now she's super supportive. Do I wish she could just come to the shows? Sure. Yeah. But, like, you know, my love life is an absolute mess sometimes, you know, because it's like, even before here, it was like, God, you know, and I've said my apologies, and we're good where it needs to be, but it's like, I've had girlfriends where if a booking came up and I thought it was lucrative enough, we had plans, I wouldn't even ask her. I'd break plans and just like, you just got to deal with it. And then, you know, and then of course I've had the situations where, you know, I was so wrapped up in wrestling and work at the time. It's like, I know I put a big strain on a lot of relationships to the point in some cases I got cheated on, and it's like, I can't even be mad at it. Cause it's like, I was cheating on you at wrestling the whole time anyway. So it's like, I was there, but I wasn't there mentally and I wasn't there emotionally. So I get it, you know? And,
you kind of, it's one of those things. I was the same with comedy. You've got to go all in on something, haven't you?
Sure.
And whether it means moving yourself halfway across the world or, you know, I quit a really good job to do stand up full time. I was poor for a long fucking
time. Oh, absolutely.
But I was happy. Colt, because I was throwing myself into something.
Didn't Colt bring that up? He was like, sometimes what you love makes you poor.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, just to kind of sustain it. But, like, that's what I mean by it's so fulfilling. Like, I look at his situation, like, you know, he made himself poor off of wrestling for a long time. And now, like, he's paying, like, some serious bills now off of just all the things that he's gotten through wrestling, you know? And I'd like to think that ship's going to come in, like, at some point, like, I'm doing everything I possibly can, man. And it's like, there's sometimes, and that's like, I get nicknamed Uncle Shug at home because sometimes I like to talk to younger guys. My thing about it is I just think about my road coming up, because there was a lot of people that told me to quit. There was a lot of people that told me, like, you're just a comedy guy. Rest on that. Like, everything's good and all that other stuff. But I'm like, I'm not going to just settle with being okay with being okay. Like, obviously, just okay ain't working for you. Or that's not what you want, so why should I have to do it? Mm. So sometimes you just got to throw that bullshit to the wind that some people are telling you, and you just got to give it a shot. And I remember people saying it would be so risky coming out there. You don't know anybody. And it's like, no, I don't know anybody. The point is to get to know people. Yeah. And like now, like, you know, I got friends around the way. I got friends all over the place now. And like, you know, Scotland opened up, and I got to do stuff in Wales. I'm doing Italy at some point in this trip. And I'm going to Romania. I never even knew they had wrestling in Romania. This could be a terrible decision. But you know what? I'm gonna go. At least I know the guy who's doing it, so it's all good. But it's like, it could be a terrible decision. But you know what? Screw it. I'm gonna go.
And at least you've seen the world doing the thing you love.
Yeah,
that's the way to look at it.
Yeah,
is you know, getting to see the world doing the thing you love is not a job then, is it?
Yeah. And plus, I'd like to think my passion is transparent. Like, you get a lot of people who cut those promos and, you know, stuff like, I wanted this since I was this. The joke they always make at WWE tryouts is how many people are going to come up to do the promo portion where they're like, this has been my dream since I've been such and such years old. Yeah. And all this other stuff, they hit the dream thing and all this stuff like that.
Well, of course it is, because why else would you? It's been millions of people.
It's been my dream ever since I saw Randy Hogan on Tough Enough and all this other stuff and everything. Like, those guys definitely trip me out. Like, the guys who wrestling wasn't invented until 2000. Either it wasn't invented for them until 2002 or 1996 when Steve Austin cut the promo. Like, it's been around a while. Like, it's cool. But my thing is, it's like, I try to be super transparent, and it's like, I know a lot of guys try to be hard men about wrestling and how much they love it and still being a fan at heart. I'd never stopped loving it. I never stopped loving it since WrestleMania 5 on VHS, man. Like, I like bootleg VHS that for that matter. So it's like, I never stopped loving it from then, and it's like, it's been rough to me. It's forsaken me a few times. It's been hard, but it's also been beautiful, and it's brought me some of the most profound things that have happened in my life. And like, I'm not gonna be that guy that gets up at a trial and be like, you know, this has been my dream. This has been like my damn reality. Like, even when it was bad, and I just want it to be everything, and I want it to be, when people watch me in a match or they see a promo and everything, even at its worst, they need to know I love it.
Yeah.
They got to know. So, yeah.
So, with you here until July, how do people get hold of you? Where are you on social media and all that sort of stuff?
SugarDunkertonBro@gmail.com for any type of marriage proposals, bookings, complaints, comments, all that good stuff.
Invitations like to Romania.
Yeah, yeah. Like, definitely, definitely. I'm touring as much as I humanly can. Sugar Dunkerton, at Sugar Dunkerton on Twitter. At Sugar Dunkerton, F-A-S-H-O, said for show. Shout out to Omar. That's my Instagram. Like, I also have a pro wrestling tee store, prowrestlingtees.com/Sugar Dunkerton. Buy some stuff. Like, seriously, like, please, that goes to me. Like, buy some stuff. Like that's great. Plus, you look good doing it and whatnot. And I appreciate everybody that's been super supportive of me doing this and the messages that I get and everything like that. I know I'm not like your average pro wrestler sometimes with some of my views and the way I do stuff, but you know, that's what makes me who I am, and I'm okay with that. And to the people who don't like that about me, or the people who don't want to see that happen to me, you know, I love y'all just as hard. I probably love y'all harder than the people who do love me, because I feel like y'all need it. It's like, why am I bothering y'all so much with this thing that I'm trying to do? It's like it shouldn't bother you. Just let me do what I'm doing. Let me fall on my face, or let me fly in the clouds. Like, it's okay. It's all good. And I'm just upwardly saying this to you too as well. Like, you being in there, two of my personal goals that I made for myself. NXT UK progress. I don't know if they'll happen this year. I don't know if they'll ever happen, but it's not one of those cases where I'm not working towards them at any given damn time. So I'm just hoping that there's enough noise that happens where it's like, you know what? We got to do something with the guy. And if there isn't, I'm not going to stop banging at your door until either the house falls down or like my hand falls off. So it is what it is. So yeah.
I genuinely hope your hand doesn't fall off.
I need that.
I need it to live.
Yeah, man.
Listen, thank you so much for chatting. You're one of those people. Sometimes I do a podcast, I'm like, oh, we could talk for another hour, and there's every chance we'll do another one of these while we're in the UK, purely because there's loads of stuff I haven't even touched on. So thank you so much, man.
Sequels, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank
Seriously,
you.
Man.
Thank you very much. See, I told you he was a cool dude. Thank you very much for Sugar Dunkerton letting me into his digs in Leeds. Let me have a chat with him. There's probably going to be a part two, because he's such an interesting dude, and I've got so many cool things that I still want to ask him. Maybe I do one with like people who've chosen to make their homes here in the United Kingdom who aren't originally from here. So someone like Sugar Dunkerton and David Starr and Travis Banks and the Aussie Open boys and El Fantasmo. Maybe that's a cool thing to put together in the future. Let me know if you think that's a good idea. At Jim Smallman on Twitter, use the hashtag Tuesday Night Jaw. Do please support the Distraction Pieces Network. I'm still super grateful that my little podcast has a home on something so amazing. So thank you, Mr. Scroobius Pip. Obviously, check out progresswrestling.com for merch and tickets and stuff for our shows. Demand-progress.com for all of our archive. I'll catch you next time I catch you. Sorry this hasn't come out on a Tuesday, but as you're probably aware, my life has gone a little bit crazy in the last few months. But I'm still trying to put these podcasts out when I can, and if you keep listening, I'll keep doing them. All right, thanks a lot, guys. I'll see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.